Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Southwest Liberty once again, podcast number 18. Today is June 16th, and tonight we have Eric Taylor, Lydia Tabbett, and Kirk Pettis. And tonight's topic is one on common law and maybe a few growing trends and our current happenings going on about the world today, but the whole aspect of the topic tonight is common law primarily, and it's kind of something I stumbled onto, and there's this culture out there of being sovereign and utilizing common law, and it's pretty interesting in the aspects of liberty, and been trying to do a lot of research in there, but the research is extremely hard to find. There's very little literature to back it up, but there's a lot of YouTube videos out there that go into it about these people utilizing common law to consider them sovereign in a sense. And the principle behind it is being a man and a woman. And by being a man, I myself have natural rights, and when men and women exist, we create a government, and the government creates citizens. So in the scheme of law, if you consider yourself a citizen of the government has complete jurisdiction over you and the laws and whatnot. But since we as liberty-minded people kind of think that government is there to preserve our freedoms and liberties, it's kind of hard to justify being a citizen in a sense, because then you're, in a sense, a slave of the government you reside in. So just an interesting topic, and we should have some enlightening conversation behind it tonight. What do you guys think?
Well, like I mentioned to you before the show, Kirk, I'm not too familiar with all of this. And as you were going over, you know, what common law is and, you know, the general idea of sovereignty, I was just looking through Wikipedia. And the first paragraph in this article is, I think, sums up what you're talking about pretty well and kind of the general idea, as far as I'm concerned, what we're talking about here with common law and sovereignty. In the wiki page that I pulled up, how they frame it is this whole topic can be described as the sovereign citizen movement. In this article, it looks to be pretty good. This is generally, at least from what I've been able to tell, what we're talking about here. The sovereign citizen movement is a loose grouping of American litigants, commentators, tax protesters, and financial scheme promoters. Self-described sovereign citizens take the position that they are answerable only to common law and are not subject to any statutes or proceedings at the federal, state, or municipal levels, or that they do not recognize U.S. currency and that they are, quote-unquote, free of any legal constraints. They especially reject most forms of taxation as illegitimate. Participants in the movement argue this concept in opposition to quote-unquote federal citizens who they say have unknowingly forfeited their rights by accepting some aspect of federal law. And that's just the overview of at least how this wiki article describes what we're talking about, and it's kind of falls in line with what I've observed and, you know, in talking with people and reading various articles and watching YouTube clips. So it's a,
yes. And that's purely propaganda is what I look at as. I feel like it's put there to hamper the movement, falsely present the argument is my sense. The whole idea of being a sovereign citizen, just what does that mean? A sovereign citizen. If citizen is a slave in a way, sovereign is king. How can you be a king and a slave at the same time? So to me, it's a form of propaganda in a way, and that's why I say it's so hard to find concrete facts in the matter and literature to back it up, and it's because it's buried. They don't want people to know about this, and what they, I mean, a lot of what they say is that's why they, our federal government right now is saying the biggest terrorists to watch out for are liberty-minded people.
Yeah, and that's actually within this article, and that kind of ties into what you're saying. It goes on to say that the United States FBI classifies some sovereign citizens, quote-unquote sovereign citizen extremists, as a domestic terrorist movement. In 2010, the Southern Poverty Law Center estimated that approximately 100,000 Americans were, quote-unquote, hardcore sovereign believers, with another 200,000, quote-unquote, just starting out by testing sovereign techniques for resisting everything from speeding tickets to drug charges.
Yeah, and it's some of the people I've talked with and other stuff I've watched on YouTube or whatnot, and following the comments and at the bottom of articles and whatnot, that, it's hard to know what's right and what's wrong. I mean, to utilize the principle of common law and to be a man or a woman, it's, you can't consider yourself a citizen for one, because that puts you instantly under their jurisdiction. And so we talk about law as most of the regulations and codes and statutes are, but the United States is a corporation. It's not, I mean, we consider it the government or whatnot, but it's a corporation.
That's how common law believers identify as, right?
Yeah. And then, so
sovereign, you can, you know, for lack of a better term, you could really classify that as a core tenet of this sovereign citizen movement that embraces common law.
Yeah, that it's a corporation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so statutes and codes are only, they're voluntary. You have to voluntary to be under that jurisdiction. And so how they snooker you into volunteering into their jurisdiction is by saying that you have to get a driver's license, by saying you have to get a license plate on your vehicle. And when you sign for those things, apparently you are signing yourself as a corporation. From now on, your name is written in all capital letters, just like a corporation is. And so how the true law works is that corporations can't sue individuals. They can only go corporate against corporate. So for all the laws and regulations to mean anything, to dictate to you, you have to be a corporation as well. And so I don't recall ever seeing these terms when you sign for your driver's license or signing for your driver's plates. Have you guys ever noticed anything like that?
No.
Yeah. So in a way, it's, what's the correct term? But you know what I'm talking about. And it's not under duress or anything, but in a way it is. To be able to drive, they say you have to have a license. And how we form the Constitution is you have, the government can't deny the right to travel. And so by them saying that you have to have these licenses to travel is taking away your rights, and then at the same time, it creates you as a corporate to where now you're under their jurisdiction. And so it's kind of I haven't studied enough to be completely knowledgeable on the matter, but this is just what I've researched so far, and it's an interesting concept, especially towards liberty, because the things we argue about the growth of government and taking back government control with certain politicians or whatnot, this movement is like, screw that. who cares? Let government do what they want to do. You just have to consent to it. If you know, and you can consent and not consent on a daily whim. It's you know, it goes back to the principle of, you know, if you're not harming anyone, you should be able to do what you want, and being a sovereign creates that lifestyle for you to be able to do what you want, as long as you know, it's not free reign to go terrorize the streets or, you know, terrorize the neighborhood, just, you know, act like the king you see in movies that do whatever they want. No, it's, you have to realize that there is consequences to your actions. And so it's, I don't know, it's pretty interesting, and I appreciate all the devil's advocate talk and whatnot. So it's, but yeah, there's like some of the articles I've said was like Timothy McVeigh claimed he was a sovereign citizen or a sovereign entity or whatnot, and or else. So it's like they try and relate every bad individual that goes off the rails and pin them as someone being sovereign and against the government, and but it's not being against the government. It's just living free and still being a good neighbor, in a, you know. And then it's the overreach of government that really wreaks havoc, in my opinion. And I think that's kind of why we all fight for liberty and like to discuss this kind of stuff.
What do you think about that, Lydia?
I don't know. I guess I can agree with the premise that we're, you know, all free individuals. I'll be perfectly honest that this isn't something that I know a ton about, by any means. I'm generally familiar with this idea of, people as corporations or the government as a corporation. I'm somewhat familiar with that idea. I don't know. It's not something I know a lot about, but I certainly can sympathize with the idea that, you know, we're all free individuals. The question then becomes how are our individual freedoms protected, or how are they acknowledged, I guess, would be, you know.
Yeah, and that's kind of the, you know, thought that I've had as well. I mean, if we're going to talk about driver's licenses, you can, I think the motivation behind licensing drivers goes back over 100 years and had to do with the fact that there's a decent amount of fatalities before formal licensing was introduced, and it was a measure to really quantify driving aptitude and, you know, make sure that, you know, you have drivers on the road who are conscientious, are aware, you know, of rules and regulations, can see, you know, can hear, you know, those types of things. And then if you get into talking about wheelage taxes, like license plate tabs or that type of thing, you know, they really came into effect to finance infrastructure. The idea behind, you know, financing roads and, you know, just public infrastructure for public's common use, you know, of that area. So, you know, that's kind of, again,
but that just
kind
of goes the way that it's liberty in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it seems like, you know,
to be licensed to be able to drive. I mean, sure, they sold us on, all right, we need to let people to, because there's so many deaths. Has deaths subsided? I mean, that's pretty much.
It's generally pretty safe to drive on the road with licensed drivers. You know.
Well, look at, have you ever watched that Ethiopian traffic intersection on YouTube?
Yeah.
I mean, that's as chaotic as it gets, and people handle themselves very well. The more I've seen visiting third world countries and our underdeveloped countries, I see people that, Americans couldn't possibly drive well, and they're the most licensed, tested, or whatnot to, be safe. But they couldn't even handle themselves in these countries where they're driving. There's three lanes in a road, and yet there's five lanes of traffic, and they wouldn't even know what to do. I mean, people get mad if someone's honking their horn. In these countries, they honk as courtesy to let them know they're being passed or whatnot, and it's utilizing the car. I mean, cars are dangerous, and it's there's no good way of making it safe as being. Working as having studied and worked in a way as a transportation engineer, I know the regulations of designing roads and whatnot, and it's, to me, it promotes inattentive driving. The safer the roads are, the more unsafe people become, is how I look at it, but it's kind of a double-edged sword, so to speak. But
so I guess my perspective on this whole kind of sovereign thing is that, I mean, it's kind of a pretty broad kind of conceptual type of thing. But to me, this whole argument kind of is answering kind of a few very, very basic questions, which is kind of, who owns your life? Who is responsible for you, who is responsible for you, for your safety, for your choices, for your actions? Who's responsible for that? And how are your rights or your liberties enforced or protected? To me, that's kind of, in a kind of general way, sort of summarizes a lot of what we're talking about here. And I think, I don't know, there's arguments to be made on both sides, and I don't quite know exactly where I fall kind of on that spectrum. But
well, how does a government grant you your rights?
No, that's not. Well, I don't know.
That's the
question. Is are your do you naturally have your rights, and the government just protects them, or are your rights given to you by the government? I don't know that that's necessarily true, but. You may naturally have your rights, but how are they enforced or how are they identified? That's a question.
Yeah, to me, America was formed as people being sovereign.
And the government.
And the Constitution, our government was formed not to protect our rights, but just as an organization of states. And then the Constitution was not for us. It was for the government of what to limit the government. That our rights were supposed to be forever natural, and it's that the government grants us our rights is so antithesis to liberty that it's.
Well, okay, I guess my response to that would be that yes, our rights would go on forever, be unlimited, or however you would want to phrase that, but still you're implementing the government to protect their. Continuation infinitely or something. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, my whole thing is, the birth of our country was, the premise was we were being taxed without representation. And so we wanted to create our own representative government in a way. And then we ended up getting taxed more than we ever were in the first place. But it's another story, but where was it going? So people refer to the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights I credit Patrick Henry in putting that because he saw what the powers that the federal government was going to have, and it was going to lead to a tyrannical government anyways. So he wanted to ensure that there was the Bill of Rights claiming it put into the Constitution to guarantee the rights of people, but
right. But then there was also right. There was also kind of a opposition to that too, right? Where there were founding fathers and founding members of this country that feared, you know, if you articulate exactly what those rights are, then you're limiting your rights to just that list. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, but without that, where would we be today? Is, you know, for how the growth of government.
Yeah, I don't really have a position on it. I'm just stating,
I mean,
yeah.
As government's growing, do you feel like you're granted more rights or less rights?
Oh, I would agree with you, Kirk, that as the government grows, I mean, what's the quote, right? As government expands, liberty contracts. I mean, I would agree with you there, sure.
But, well, yeah, I wish I could recall. I mean, most of the rights we had in America when we were still under colony rule or colonial rule, they had most of the rights anyways, too. It was to an extent, but there was just how England was formed at the time, too. It wasn't, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but this is going to go nowhere anyways. But how about, Eric, we play that clip that you found. It kind of goes over the common law stuff.
Sure.
Of this sovereign fight.
That's probably about 9 minutes or so, but
it's pretty well laid out, is what I listened to it before the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll roll the clip here.
Think of an aspect of your life that dictates the limits of your freedom. Government and law enforcement, insurance and pharmaceutical companies, taxes, building permits, driver's licenses, and more. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of stipulations, regulations, and boundaries on our freedom. And out of the ones that were just mentioned, how many have you researched to find out whether they apply to you or not? Let's look at the forms of law that we currently acquiesce to. A common misconception among people is that any rule or regulation that governs them falls under one category: law. But there are many other forms of law that people abide by without realizing that they simply do not apply to them. Another misconception is that a nation's constitution gives us our rights. A constitution does nothing more than list the rights that we already have. We are born with inalienable rights, endowed to us by our Creator. They are not given to us, and they cannot be given away. The most a person can do with a right is choose whether to exercise it or not. Maritime admiralty law is what's known as the law of the water. It is superseded by civil law and only applies to those who willingly contract themselves into it. The definition of admiralty law is a body of private international law governing the relationships between private entities which operate vessels on the oceans. Let's look at how and why a form of law that is fashioned to govern corporations, businesses, and vessels has imposed its rule over natural human beings. This is all done through a form of word magic. A simple perversion of language has made it possible to convince people around the world that these alternative laws apply to them. One of the predominant beliefs in modern culture is that licenses, permits, registrations, and other forms of documentation are required to operate motor vehicles, use public roads, build structures and establishments, engage in free enterprise, and much more. Sadly, these beliefs are based on little to no investigation whatsoever, and are false. This belief structure is perpetuated by maritime admiralty law. This form of law was originally created to govern ships docking in foreign nations for the import or export of products and resources. It deals with banking and merchant affairs, not civil affairs. When a product resource and accounts for it with a certificate, that certificate marks the birth date of that product in the custody of the respective nation. Think of why it is supposedly required to have a certificate of live birth in the first place.
What's that?
You got booted.
The Barron's Dictionary of Banking Terms.
Okay.
Did you know you got cut off there for a minute?
No.
You want to back it up 30 seconds or so? You got cut off for a little while.
I was going to say, yeah, like 40, 45 seconds, yeah.
Well, the thing about it is the recording, the master recording is on my side, not the Skype call.
Oh, okay.
So I can, even though you guys got cut, I'm still recording.
No, I know, but the clip, since you got cut out, wasn't playing.
Well, it was
through
playing.
Skype. But I know, but you got cut out. You got dropped. It just called you back here.
Yeah, but Eric's recording the clip. He's not recording the...
They're two tracks.
Yeah. Right.
So
never
mind. The way that this records, there's one track...
It makes sense. All right.
There's one track that records what's happening on Skype, and then there's one track that records what's happening on my Mac. So,
perfect. So Lydia and I are the only two left in the dark on that. So perfect.
I can go back.
No, let's just keep going.
Okay.
Defines a certificate as a paper establishing an ownership claim. So right there, we notice that everyone with a birth certificate is defined as being owned. People are used as collateral with other nations because the U.S. is bankrupt. The United States declared bankruptcy on March 9th of 1933. At this point, the U.S. began taking out loans from a private, non-government affiliated corporation called the Federal Reserve. With no money to pay back the loans, the United States began using the citizens as collateral. All birth and marriage certificates are literally warehouse receipts. Just look at the similarities of warehouse receipts and birth certificates. Both document the date of issue, a serial number, registration number or receipt number, a description of the product, and an authorized informant to notify the appropriate government agency. With all of this information being readily available, the majority of people are unaware of their involvement with maritime admiralty law. This is possible through the manipulation of language. This admiralty law changed the meaning of the word person from a natural living person to a corporation. Driver's licenses, vehicle registrations, auto insurance forms, building permits, gun permits, work permits, tax filing documents, birth and death certificates, traffic citations, and many other forms of documentation that were once believed to be absolutely necessary only apply to persons or corporations. Upon signing such a legal document, you are indirectly waiving your rights under the Constitution and lowering your status to that of a corporation that is created with the same exact name as you. The only way to reconcile your true name from the name of the corporation is to take notice that the corporation has its name in all capital letters. This is known as Capitis Diminutia Maxima. You may take notice that your driver's license, birth certificate, social security card, insurance cards, and more use all capital letters to legally represent the corporation with your name, not you. The corporation is known as an artificial person, whereas you, the human being, are known as a natural person. This deception goes even deeper when it comes to the courts that we attend. When showing up to court, you will notice that there are seats for witnesses behind a wooden fence or barrier. The defendant must cross through the entrance to the other side of the barrier where the plaintiff and judge sit. This act symbolizes the boarding of a ship. At this time, business can be conducted in maritime admiralty law. The judge, acting as captain or banker, is responsible for settling the balance between the two sides. This is why there is always a monetary value involved in any court case. The captain is simply dealing with banking and merchant disputes. Once the balance is paid, the case is closed. To turn the court case away from admiralty law where your rights are not protected, you must avoid agreeing to represent the artificial person. This is done by stating that you are the natural person. You don't have a first or last name because those imply corporate title. In a court case, you may state that the court takes judicial notice of your honor's oath of office. Every judge must take an oath of office to practice law. Yet you must make it clear to the court and the jury that the judge is acting as judge and not banker. Remember that you are a natural human being of the earth. You are not governed by anything but your own consciousness. Laws are created within a society. The society that created the laws we see being enforced today is called the Law Society. Yet the most beautiful part of this entire deception is the fact that we are not part of the Law Society, so their laws do not apply to us.
Judges, lawyers, and law enforcement officers, they're all part of a society. Within that society, they've created their own language that's deceptively similar to English. They have these little things called statutes, acts, and regulations that seem like laws, but they really only apply to those within their society. So that basically means all the traffic violations, minimum age requirements, and everything except for damage to another person or their property doesn't really apply to the natural person.
Laws only apply to those within the law society. The game being played is an illusion. You can simply choose to open your eyes and reclaim the freedom that you were born with, bound by nothing but the limits of your imagination. These are just a few examples of assuring that your rights are being protected. By far, the most important line of defense against this deception is to be aware of the perversion of language, and be absolutely aware of how you form your beliefs and concepts.
What do you think about that, Kirk?
Sounds pretty good. Goes along the lines of most of the stuff that I trust that I hear, on this topic versus like sovereign citizen or whatnot, because that's kind of shows the fallacy behind it.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, the whole concept of the Admiralty Law too, because it's known people that won't enter the court until the judge is there and asked to be invited in, instead of walking through the doors uninvited, because then you automatically put yourself into that Admiralty Law, versus if you ask what kind of court it is and to be invited in, and then ask if the judge is about his oath and whatnot, then it's you put the court back into your favor, because the judge isn't supposed to be able to, they're supposed to just preside over the thing, not to make judgments.
Yeah.
More of a Roman law or civil law that he referenced in that clip and such. But it really just highlights that of how we're snookered and how this whole system has been created around us. And it goes into how the Federal Reserve works too, to where we are, just because we exist, we grant the government the ability to loan money on ourselves. And that's what creates this debt around us. And I've never seen it, but there's a lot of rumors out there that everyone has a certain amount of money. That once you're born, you have a certain amount of money that the government has because of you being born in the first place to deal with. And that all goes back to essentially the 14th Amendment, where they used the concept of freeing, the slaves and whatnot to make everyone a citizen at the same time. So that essentially created citizens of America, when there wasn't really quite that concept beforehand. And that's when kind of the whole corporation thing took off, allowed the Federal Reserve within a century to take root in this form of law to enslave us. But so that's kind of the premise behind the whole thing.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you before the show that my general view on common law and people who utilize common law or are attracted to it are individuals who are generally on the wrong side of the law. So they find themselves in, you know, just tricky situations. So they, you know, basically go back to the, from what I've read and what I've seen, they go back to the fact that they're quote unquote sovereign, and that as long as they're, you know, as they're not hurting anyone or the environment, that they're fine. In a lot of ways, to me, this seems to be, you know, either, you know, you catch the bug and you really, really want to dig into, you know, why individuals don't have the amount of natural rights that they're entitled to, or, you know, why they're being persecuted unfairly, and they use common law. Those seems to be the, to me at least, be the two primary motivations to using common law.
Well, it just goes to the premise of law in the first place, is to make, it's argued to make a just society, but then when laws themselves start to be create the unjust around us, you know, where all of a sudden you can be, yeah, your property's taken away just by not wearing a seatbelt as you drive, or driving a little too fast sometimes. And so, yeah, but that's really the only time you're going to hear about people claiming that too, is, you know, when they are faced with these fines levied on them. But, I mean, that's kind of why I would say that's when you mostly get that gets highlighted. But it really goes back to, yeah, it's people exercising their rights. And if, you know, going back to the premise of, you know, let me face my accuser. Who did I harm? You know, who did I harm by not wearing a seatbelt here? So when, right. If I thought that was one of the premises of law, that you get to face your accuser, and who can they bring to accuse you of being harmed?
Yeah. You get, to me, you're just talking about individual determinism, almost anarchic thought, you know, where should you be persecuted or prosecuted for crimes that don't negatively impact others. And that to me, I mean, when you're looking at common law, that's what, to me, seems to be the primary driver behind that. But, you know, I don't think there's a perfect solution, you know, when talking about law, because when you talk about law, you're talking about something that regulates and restrains human behavior, and human behavior is certainly fallible. So that you can't, I don't know, with, even if you're using common law, do you think that would be a more perfect solution?
Well, as I've started to study this, you know, I bought all these common law books, and I can't get any concrete facts down. They're kind of like pre-law books in a way. Some books are lean more progressive, and some are more going towards the sovereign, seems. But, you know, I just got these books, so I'm trying to get through them. So that's why it's going to be a process of learning this stuff. But it goes to what is law? I mean, the philosophy behind it. It's, I don't care if it's common law or what, or what you call it, it's what is the true philosophy behind it? What's its purpose? You know, should we not agree that law should be equal for everyone? And when we start to go down these precedences and creating laws, regulations, codes for social good, I like to call it sympathy code. To where, all right, yeah, some people get harmed by doing these certain things. Maybe we should pass a code. And it's created not on facts, but more on sympathy and the idea of a public good, which is all progressive ideology, social Darwinism, you know, these certain, and so how do you even apply that? To me, when you start going down these sympathy and social good codes and statutes, regulations, that leads to inequality. And that's not equality. That's, you can do what you want until you do this, and then that, how is that equal? About, because the whole concept is a just person can go about living their lives and still, by doing good, still end up harming people around you inadvertently. So how do you rectify that? I mean, so do you, I mean, that's, so it's just taking away people's property. So to me, the whole system ends up favoring more wealthy people, elites in a way, or, you know, if it favors a top-down structure. So it's the concept behind it is it's tough to to me, it's so easy to sit there and argue, oh yes, we should have this regulation for this, but it's once you start taking people's property and limiting their freedoms because of it, it's just not based on liberty in any sense. It's from the principles of liberty is how I look at it. So,
Kirk, can you hear me at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
Seemed like it was screwing up for a little bit there.
Yeah, it might be thunderstorms or something. Who knows?
Yeah, it's pretty windy right now.
Yeah, we got all kinds of.
I blame John C. Dvorak.
For the wind?
For the rain stick.
Rain stick. Was he rattling the rain stick on Sunday?
He was going crazy on it.
Well, they don't have any rain in San Francisco, so that's the difference. It's drought.
But, what do you guys think about that whole concept of being a citizen? So this whole, with this Tea Party guy, Brad, winning, being out the primary down in, was it North Carolina?
No, Virginia, Eric Cantor.
Virginia?
Virginia against Cantor, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct, yes.
And how the media kind of played it was about this whole illegal immigration push by the Republicans for amnesty and whatnot, and a lot of the Tea Party people are anti that, but it's, I think what it, that was kind of the spin they put on it. I think the most part of it was Cantor's backing of the TSA. I mean, not TSA, the NSA.
No, I think it's more than that even, actually. Well, sorry, continue.
Well, yeah, we can delve into that in a second here. But my point was, in this kind of precept concept of what we're talking about, would all these so-called illegal aliens really want citizenship? I mean, in a way, they can be more free by not being citizens living in America. I mean, is that something that I'm getting to the point where it's like, what's the big deal of being a citizen? Well, I mean, do we really want to be a citizen, get married, have children, turn them into slaves to the government that you have all this debt that they're being put on them, our future generations, for our so-called good that we're doing right now? We're totally enslaving our next generations and ourselves, and filling our prisons up with all these codes and regulations. And well, yeah, I wanted to go into private property. We talked about that last week. So the essence of private property is you have to be under a government then as well. I mean, well, you can't just go, why can't we go buy land or buy water in the ocean I look at it as because it's international waters. It's not claimed by anyone. It's agreed upon, and no country can claim it in a sense. And it's, you know, so the whole concept is this whole, the idea of America is not the idea that we're led to believe is kind of how it's starting to look, in my opinion, to where it's built upon the same principles. And it was, we were sold a bill of goods to, that we thought we were going to live in this free society. And it's not such at all. And so why we had that whole argument about private property tax last week. And so in a sense, if you have to buy property from a government, in a sense, you are renting it then anyways. And so, but do you guys see what I'm saying about this matter? That it's, I mean, this whole concept of citizenship, country citizenship, and the whole conservative movement towards this illegal alien amnesty, anti-amnesty push. It's like, why even have the citizens in the first place? To me, it just feeds the beast, in my argument, and it goes into the whole concept of this left-right paradigm that just continues to enslave us anyways, that there is no true liberty concept out there. And that's why there's no reason to fight for liberty in the government when we're already free. And it's, the government should just be off in the weeds anyways and let them do what they want. And it's, if people concede, accept the jurisdiction limitations that they put upon us, great. You know, if it's good for the public good, great. But it doesn't have to be that way is kind of what I was leaning towards, where it can be a dual citizenship in a sense, to where if we really truly are free, people should be able to not be citizens in America. If I kind of tied it together there, I don't know. Maybe I'm just off on a tangent ramblings, but
only a little bit.
Or is that the lone wolf call? It should be clear right now.
The no agenda soundboard back.
Well, okay, Kirk. I think my interpretation of what you're saying is it sounds.
At least once a show. Come on.
Okay. So my what I'm kind of getting from what you're saying is it sounds very much like what you would hear as the argument for anarchism. Am I correct in saying that?
Well, after listening to a podcast on anarchism, yes, it's not. I'm saying it can exist side by side. You can have the government jurisdiction living in counties and whatnot, but why does it have to be forced upon you? Why do we have to bear children into this world that are going to have all this debt and enslavement that's put on them? You know, is it truly just? Is it truly free? I mean, how can you pursue your life, enjoy your liberties, pursuit of happiness and such? To me, there's just something so wrong in this whole system that it doesn't make sense. And this kind of whole topic kind of sheds light on something that could make sense, is the way I look at it and getting away from it. But,
well, people aren't, you're not forced to live here. I mean, there are other, you can move to other countries that, you know, ascribe to that type of philosophy, like a, you know,
I don't know of any that exist.
I think Ethiopia has some pretty good anarchy there.
You really think so? Mm-hmm. Is that just because of how people...
You should do a podcast on that, International Liberty Alternatives.
No, but to me, it's the same. It's all in the same boat. There's been territories cordoned off, governments enacted. And so, I mean, are there not citizens of Ethiopia? Or is it just the uprising that makes it the anarchy that's going on?
There are pockets of lawless anarchy. within that country.
Well, I would say there's pockets of that here in America too.
But if you're, there's nothing to prevent people from, you know, finding areas like that, right? There's the Free State Project in New Hampshire.
I was just gonna say, Kirk. I think your best bet would be New Hampshire.
That would be the best for you, for what
but
you're talking
see,
about here.
Do you see what this argument is? Supposedly we live in a free country, but I have to go and move to a certain area of a defined area to do so.
Well, that's sort of...
If I have natural rights as a human, why can't I have human natural rights to exist in a certain vicinity if I pay for it?
Well, I think right, that's sort of the idea with the 10th Amendment and with the Constitution, is that your rights are protected, or your rights as articulated in the Constitution are protected, and then you have these, you know, state governments where what's the phrase exactly? It's like laboratories of democracy or something like that, and from there, you know, you have various forms and types of governing, I guess.
And that's kind of the, you know, that I've picked up from Ron Paul, where he said, you know, we should have a weak federal government, have strong state governments, allow like-minded individuals to move freely about. They will, you know, they will vote in their type of politician, their type of government, and you'll have the ability to move around to a locality that best fits whatever your, you know, personal or political inclinations are, right?
All right, I think so. I mean, obviously, it's a kind of a gray area. I don't know. A lot of this is very conceptual and things that I'm not super informed on. But
well, that's why I like to keep it conceptual. We don't have to talk about concrete factual dictations of countries or states or whatnot. It's why not just can we? Is it that inconceivable to just live free, to be able to live somewhere, to pay rent? Rent a piece of property by having to pay property taxes or so,
Do you have to
be under that jurisdiction? I mean, can we not live free?
I think there.
Well, you know, you do bring up a good point, Kirk, and this is something I've sort of been thinking about more so kind of in recent months. But that is sort of the relationship or the. Connection between psychology and government, and kind of how that is related, because that plays a big role too, I think, in that this is just all sort of kind of thinking out loud or along my train of thought, but you know, there's a great deal of, you know, legislation or governing, you know, is somewhat dependent on the psychology of the population or what people are willing to tolerate. And I think that's a component as well.
People are willing to tolerate a lot.
I know it's true.
It's very sad, but we're so integrated with propaganda towards fear and sympathy that it's, you know, it's the whole concept of what I've been relating to, just people's minds race about all the bad things that could happen instead of just like that clip we played earlier about the limitless possibilities of your own mind, of your living free to live in a free markets. I mean, we can't, gold was confiscated at one point in America. We're using fiat currencies. It's the whole concept of liberty and freedom is so against what America stands for today that it's embarrassing for me to say that we live in a free country. that the whole concept of living in a free country is.
Oh, sure. I can sympathize with that. I can sympathize with that. Absolutely.
Makes sense. But that's the whole concept is what I would like to relate to, to further discussion, but it's.
Right, and I don't think from anyone in our group that participates on these podcasts, you're going to get any sort of opposition to these ideas of individual rights or natural rights or things like that. I think we can agree that we're certainly become less free all the time, and the majority of the population is completely. Unaware or misinformed on that.
Yeah, and the problem I see with the concept of law is when a year ago I would argue, all right, yeah, so a government needs to enact and enforce law to live in a just, free society. But the more I've been studying law, To me, I like to think of it as the philosophy of law and how, but you can't break it down that way. It all is based on precedent and the social leanings and how good lawyers are at just portraying their argument. And it's funny, one of these law books I have now is I think it's New York University. One of the first classes they make pre-law students take is how to be a lawyer. And they're talked about, they're judged, they're graded on how their mannerisms are, how they speak, how they turn down clients that can't pay for the prestige of having a good lawyer that we're going to produce at this university, how you kindly put them down within a few minutes because you don't want to talk to them for 20 minutes. You need to kindly let them shuffle them aside within a minute or two without while saving face in a way. And it's, is that really how we want law to be, to where the character of a lawyer is what makes just law around us and how, our society will be governed behind that? To me, the whole concept is something that needs to be talked about just as the Federal Reserve is talked about, in my opinion, in the liberty spheres. Because before I would argue, yes, there needs to be good law and good systems enacted to portray that law justly. But the more I've looked into it, the more it's like I think the whole system is set up ass backwards.
So you're talking about marketing, essentially. You don't like the marketing aspects, promotional aspects of, at least in that instance, that are being taught to prospective lawyers. It sounds to me that's just...
If you went and talked to a lawyer about anything we were talking about tonight, they'll tell us we're crazy. They don't teach law.
You don't have to talk to a lawyer. I think you can talk to at least two of us on this podcast, and we'll say that, too.
What was that?
I said you can ask a couple of us on this podcast and say what we're talking about is crazy.
No, I can sympathize with the sentiment, but there's a handful of things where I think it's a little off the rails here.
Well, I guess what appeals to me about this whole sovereign fight through common law is the philosophy of law that it entails. It doesn't talk about the specific law and how how I was talking about how law is constantly evolving because of precedences and whatnot. You can't really nail down exactly how a law
hit the reset button. It sounds like almost what you're saying, Kirk. Am I right?
Well, it's, I just would love to see more. I'm always more of a philosophy type of why things happen, why things are created, not just, all right, this is how it is. No, I want to know why it's done that way. And so this whole sovereign thing just appeals to me in that sense because of the philosophy behind it. And it just seems a more just system, equal system. And we use, and therefore through common law you use jurors, not judges, to determine the fines and punishments by harming other people's property and such. So instead of having all these codes and regulations written down that society is deemed for society's good, that essentially is not creating an equal setting under law, especially when you're teaching lawyers how to just be in this specific sphere to be good lawyers or lawyering, and that to influence law that way. That is not equality, and that's something that should be taught in law school, is how to enact law through equality. And it seems like it's a failing system in a sense, and it's just set up for a ruling class, is how the more I've studied into it, it seems to be. And hopefully I can find other literature that appeases this sense, but it's hard to come by. Did you learn a little bit about common law, Lydia?
Yeah, I certainly did. I mean, I did. I don't know. It's interesting. The philosophy side, I can agree with you, is fascinating as to the why and the philosophy and the ethics and sort of overarching ideas behind, you know, which is kind of the fundamental question of politics in a lot of ways, which is, you know, what is the proper role of government, if any, you know, that whole train of thought. It's interesting. I agree with you there.
If you go on YouTube, type in common law or sovereign, you can watch some fascinating stuff that will really make you think. And to our listeners out there, if you have some time to spend, I highly recommend it. It's pretty entertaining, makes you think. What did you think, Eric, while you were doing some research?
Well, I didn't. Up until, I think we talked about it a week ago, I really didn't know too much about it. I think, in principle, a lot of the aspects of common law are, you know, they're attractive. But I'm not really against, you know, modern law in the United States. And, you know, my attitude on this could change, but I think I mentioned to you this before. I view where we live as being probably the most just, fair, free system that's been devised in modern history. So nothing's perfect. You know, the common law certainly isn't perfect. Our current law structure isn't perfect, but to me the empowering aspect, as far as where we are, is, you know, if you don't like it and you get enough people who are motivated enough to get good politicians or legislators in place, you can change whatever you don't like, and that's still very doable. So, you know, it's interesting, and there are, you know, I can see that as far as, you know, the idea that, you know, a sovereign, you know, the sovereign citizen really shouldn't be punished heavily if what they've been tried for really doesn't affect anyone other than themselves. That's it. To me, that's interesting. I mean, and that should be talked about. I mean, if there are victimless crimes that are heavily prosecuted, and there certainly are, I think that needs to be examined more, and it needs to be treated in a more humane fashion.
Fair enough. Yep. Just let me remind you as a closing statement. It's now law or statute that we have to buy health care.
That's right.
It's just the way things are going.
So and then I think maybe we could also just insert the comment there that Medtronic is announcing that they're moving to Ireland, I saw.
Ireland has no taxes. They don't have they have very low corporate taxes. Google, Apple, yeah. You know, other corporations that they funnel significant amounts of cash to Ireland just because of the fact that it's not taxed. But yeah, that's another place you could live, Kirk. Ireland.
I was gonna say Ireland. Yeah, there you go, Kirk.
Maybe.
No property taxes, low corporate taxes.
Just remember, you are a corporate too. Well, it's been a fun evening tonight, hopefully, for everyone. I know it's been fun for us. And thanks for listening to Show 18. See you next week.